Great. Hello, everyone. Hello. Got two friends with me this morning, Susie and Becky down here, so say hello to them afterwards. Sorry. I promised I wouldn't embarrass her, but there you go. So, today we're looking at the story of Caleb. And Caleb is a story about life at the border, life at the boundary. And I think that's really sort of appropriate for us as a community at the moment, because we are kind of at a new boundary, a new border in Alma's sort of church life together, in our history. But also I think it's really relevant to all of us as believers, because I think as Christians we live at the borderland in some ways. We do life at the border. And what I mean by that is the border as a place where you've got a choice between, do you advance and step into what you're supposed to step into, or do you sit still or shrink back into what you're not supposed to be and where you're not supposed to be going? And so it's kind of a message for then, but it's a message for now in so many ways as well. So Israel were at a boundary, and they had choices to make, and those choices would affect not just them, but generations to come. And that's another thing about life at the border. The choices you make at the border in life don't just affect you, they affect the people that come after you as well. There's an inheritance and a legacy to those things. So this story's got a lot for us to reflect on about life at the border. But going to do a short recap. Laura nicked most of it, actually. Sometimes after the children's talk, I think, why do we need another one? That's just great. That's it in a nutshell, but much more concise. But just to kind of help us, because it's about getting the story, so let's get into the story this morning. So Israel's story begins with Abraham, and Israel were no ordinary people. They were a people with a promise and a purpose. So Abraham is called by God. He has this encounter with God where God says to him, I'm going to promise you this. You're going to be a great nation. Your descendants are going to be as numerous as the stars in the sky. I'm going to give you this land to inherit where you'll be a great nation. But the promise came with a purpose. It wasn't just a promise for Abraham's sake. There was a purpose to it. And he said, your purpose is that you're going to be a blessing to all the nations of the world. So you're going to be great, but so that you can be a blessing. I'm going to set you apart, not just from other people, but for the benefit of other people. So it's not us versus them, it's us for them. So there's a promise and a purpose. So Abraham sets out on this journey, and to cut a long story short and miss loads out, it takes a big detour. And as often epic journeys do, it doesn't go according to plan, and they end up in this detour. Oh, we're not a great nation. We're being ruled by a great nation. We're in slavery in Egypt. And they lived under this brutal regime under Pharaoh in Egypt. But of course, the story doesn't end there. The Israelites cry out to God, who hears their cries, and as Laura said, sends Moses, who leads them out of captivity towards this promise that God has made to them, towards this promised land. And so that's where we join Israel today. We join them at the boundary, on the verge of this promise. Tired, longing, hopeful, discouraged, all sorts of emotions that we often face at a boundary. And I guess sometimes that's why we know it is time for a move to something new, when we feel many of those things. So I'm just going to work through the passage a little bit and bring out some points that I think will be helpful. I don't actually need this because I've got it written down. So I'm going to walk through the passage a little bit. So in verse 2, 1 and 2, it says, send some men, this is God speaking to Moses, send some men to explore the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the Israelites. The key point there is, which I am giving. God was giving them this land. This was what they were about to step into wasn't something that they just had to go and take by force, though there was an element of you have to go and take hold of the land. But it was a land that was being given to them. It was gifted. It was their inheritance to take. It wasn't a land that was being taken as other nations of the world took their land, you know, in this dog-eat-dog world of the biggest, the strongest, get the spoils. That wasn't the situation. That's not the message of this story. It wasn't dependent on their ability, and it wasn't dependent on any kind of moral character they had either. It wasn't, you're a special people, you're so holy, now I'm going to give you this. It was, this is gifted to you because I've called you for a special purpose, a promise and a purpose. So their job was to step into it and take hold of something that was already being given to them. It was something they were destined for. Verse 27 says, this is jumping ahead now. So the spies went into the land, one from each tribe. Significant again, like, this is something for everyone. This isn't just something for one or two. One from each tribe, representative of all the people. We all do this together. And it says this in verse 27. We went into the land to which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey. Here is its fruit. But the people who live there are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large. When I read this, it reminds me of a really bad apology. You know when you apologize to someone and you say, I understand this, but, and you follow up your apology with a but quickly, and straight away the other person knows this isn't an apology, you're just trying to justify yourself. I know this because I do this quite a lot. I apologize, and it's followed with a but, and it kind of nullifies the whole apology. And it's like they're saying, yeah, it's really good, but here's all the reasons why we shouldn't take hold of it, why we shouldn't step into it. And it's kind of like they're just seeing with a perspective of pure, we can't do it. Their perspective is all wrong. They're not seeing with the perspective of, this is something that is ours, that we're destined for. This isn't something that's being given to us, that God has destined for us to inherit. They're seeing it from the perspective of the human, of what's before us, what are the challenges. And I also think they're seeing it from a perspective of, actually, we've just been, look at all these enemies ahead. Look what we'd have to do to inherit this gift. We'd have to conquer all these people. We've just come out of captivity. We don't want to be there again. And I think they're being fueled by their experience, which has made them bitter. You know, they say, you know, your experiences can make you bitter or they can make you better. And we have a choice in that. That, you know, as people of faith, we can be formed, whatever our experience, we can be formed by God's story in our lives, or we can be formed by our perspective of our experiences. And it seems to me that they have these big buts, to excuse the expression. They come back with big buts, and their but is, but look at all these challenges, look at all the problems, look at all the reasons why this will be really difficult. And that's their perspective. And the next bit is kind of, Caleb realizes that the people that shout the loudest get to determine the story. And it says this in verse 30. Jonathan, you are on the ball. We haven't coordinated with this. He's just very good at picking up where I'm going here. And it says, Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, we should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it. Wow, there's three waters here. Are any of them today's? Do we know if any of these water are from today? Has anyone put a water under here today? No, okay, I won't drink them then. Sorry. Oh, do you mind? I'm just getting a little grasshopper in my throat. We can certainly do it. What is this? Is Caleb just reckless? This could look like recklessness, couldn't it? You know those people who are like, oh, I don't care what's there. Let's just go and do it. Let's do it, and we'll deal with the consequences later. You know people like that. Was he just so bored, so frustrated? We've been wandering for so long. We've been in captivity. Look, here's our land. Let's go and do it. So was it just this reckless faith? Or was it that maybe Caleb is seeing with different eyes, actually? He's not seeing with eyes that have been formed in captivity and slavery. He's seen with a different perspective. Maybe he's seen with eyes of, yeah, we might have been in slavery. Thanks, Al. Thanks so much. We might have been in slavery. We might have been in captivity. But didn't God send Moses to lead us out? Didn't he send us manna in the desert to feed us when we were hungry? Hasn't God led us safe thus far and grace will lead us home? I don't think we can certainly do it is just naive hope in this story. I think it's a spirit of faith and a spirit of adventure based on an experience of God who called them out of slavery, out of their meaninglessness, out of their wandering and into their destiny. But also Caleb isn't blind to the struggles, because you could think, oh, yeah, but there are enemies, there are giants in the land. We've seen them, and Caleb has seen them. Faith isn't blind to the reality of challenges and struggles. Caleb saw them all. It's just that he understands that faith lives in the presence of struggles. I'm reading a book by a wonderful author called Walter Brueggemann. It's a great name, isn't it? Walter Brueggemann. And he's a theologian of the Old Testament. And he says this. He says, the Bible knows from the beginning that promises are always kept in the midst of threats. I'll say that again. The Bible knows from the beginning that promises are always kept in the midst of threats. And then he sort of uses a Psalm of David. Tables are always prepared. So, you know, a meal at a table is always prepared in the presence of my enemies. David wrote a psalm, you prepare a table for me in the presence of my enemies. So here we see faith that isn't ignorant of the threat, the challenge, the obstacle. It's just not intimidated by them. It's just not letting doubt turn into fear. And so Caleb silences the voice of fear, because he knows that the voice that shouts the loudest will determine the outcome of the story. And actually that does happen, which we'll see in a few minutes. But in this story, fear doesn't stay silent for long. And I think that's something really important to note as well, that on a journey of faith, fear doesn't just disappear once you've conquered it once. Once you've addressed it, it always rears its ugly head. And they come back and they say, in verse 31, we can't attack those people. They're stronger than we are. And they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land they had explored. Doubt turns to fear, and fear spreads through a community. And I think we're seeing that so much in our world at the moment, aren't we, where fear it spreads, it's got an energy to it. It spreads through a whole community and it determines where a story is going, how a narrative unfolds. We're seeing it in our own politics, in the States. We're seeing a really fear-based sort of political campaign that is spreading fear amongst people, which is actually determining a story that's going to be lived out by a whole community of people. And that's what's happening here. And I think this is so important to be aware of as a community of faith, that we need to be aware that fear is there are challenges that will face any journey we go on together. There are obstacles, there are even threats. And it's not to be ignorant of those, it's to be aware of them, but not to be overcome by them and not be intimidated by them, and to live in faith and say, we're a people called for a purpose and a promise, and we are going to step into our destiny no matter what. But we will face our fears and the threats and the challenges. And so the destiny of this generation and many to come will be determined by whichever voice shouted the loudest here. Would it be the voice of fear, or would it be the voice of faith? And I really believe that communities need that voice of faith to speak up and challenge fear in our community, in our communities, and call us to a better future and to inherit the life that God has for us. And what in this story, what fear does is it causes them to have a really unhelpful view of the past. They start looking behind them, and the past becomes something that holds them back rather than spurs them to a better future. I've experienced this in my own life where you have a choice how you handle the past. The past can be a really helpful thing that helps you to live a better future, even if it's a really negative past, which you decide, I'm not going to live like that. I'm not going to live how that person lived. I'm going to allow that to be transformed in my life to live a better future. But they don't do that. What their fear causes them to do with the past is to reevaluate it and see it more favorably. So they say, wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt than this future, these threats that are ahead of us? Wouldn't that be better for us? And so it kind of creates this longing for a past that was awful. And they see it through rose-tinted spectacles. And fear can make you either cling to the past or try and recreate it in the present rather than learn from the past and move into a better future. And do you know what? God doesn't live in the past. God doesn't live in the past. He calls us to a future hope. And I don't think many of the Israelites were ready for their past to be transformed. A couple of them were, but many of them weren't. Maybe they hadn't dealt with the whole thing of captivity and slavery. Maybe they haven't come to terms with that. Maybe they weren't ready yet to face another battle. But fear, in this story, fear won the day. And they retreated and they wandered. And they wandered, and they wandered. And for 40 years, they wandered aimlessly in the desert. Because fear shouted the loudest. Fear won the day. And that became their story. But the story doesn't end there, which is brilliant and which is amazing. And what I love about this is, in that 40 years of wandering, God doesn't abandon them. God doesn't say, oh, you blew it. That was your chance gone. That's it. He remains faithful to them. He remains their God. He leads them. He feeds them. He looks after them. And what is also incredible is that Caleb doesn't give up hope either. I was reading it thinking, if I was Caleb and I'd said, let's go and do this, we can do it, let's go and inherit what's ours, what God's purposed us for, what we're meant, what we're destined to be and do, the life we're destined to live. And then, actually, the majority won out of fear, and it meant that I had to walk around a wilderness for 40 years. I think I'd be pretty annoyed about it. I'd be bitter. I'd be like, if we'd gone my way, this wouldn't have happened. Amy's laughing because she knows that would be me, wouldn't it? Like, we should have done it my way. Look. He doesn't do that. And he doesn't cave into fear. And another thing he doesn't do is he doesn't jump ship. He doesn't say, well, I've had enough of you lot then. We're clearly on different pages. You haven't got faith. Right, I'm off. He doesn't do that either. And I'm just going to go to Joshua 14, where the story kind of picks up 40, 45 years later. And this is Caleb speaking, and he says, now then, just as the Lord promised, he has kept me alive for 45 years since the time he had said this to Moses about going to inherit the land, while Israel moved about in the wilderness. So here I am today, 85 years old, exclamation mark, 85 years old. I am still as strong today as the day Moses sent me out. I'm just as vigorous to go out to battle now as I was then. I want to be like this when I'm 85 years old. Come on, I'm ready. Now give me this hill country that the Lord promised me that day. You see that? There's no sense of injustice there. There's no sense of this guy's been formed by this experience into some bitter person. His life hasn't become meaningless through all this. He's kept faith, he's kept hope, he's kept a spirit of adventure. And finally, he inherits the land And there were challenges and there were threats, and he did have to win battles, but this was something that God had destined him for, that God had given him, that was his to be taken. And he stepped up and received the gift. And it doesn't end there either. I said at the beginning that this affects generations to come. The decisions we make at the border, do we step forward in faith or do we shrink back in fear, isn't just about us, it affects generations to come. And in a funny kind of way in this story, you see it in Caleb's daughter. And Caleb at some point says, there's a piece of land, I'll give my daughter in marriage to whoever goes and wins it. And so this person steps up, goes and wins it, and Caleb gives his daughter in marriage. And then Caleb's daughter later comes to Caleb, and she comes with the same spirit of adventure and boldness and faith that Caleb himself had. And she says to him, Dad, give me this land with the springs at the top and the springs below. And she's courageous and she says, I want this land. Give this land to me. And Caleb gives her the land. And you read it and it's something so simple. But actually, it's kind of a sign of this legacy of faith and adventure that's passed on to the next generation, that's passed on down Caleb's line. But the generations following those that didn't have faith, that didn't want to step up and inherit what was theirs, didn't inherit the land. And so our choices at the boundary really do affect the generations to come. And thinking about our own journey, I think this is such a helpful story to reflect on. Well, it is for me, because it makes me think about, what do I do at the borders? Whether that's a new thing in my life where I've got a big decision to make, and do I, you know, step forward in faith in what I believe God has made me, purposed me for, or do I kind of sit still or shrink back in fear? But also the borders of everyday living, of I've got a decision to make every day. Do I become all that I'm meant to be? Do I inherit the life God has for me today? Or do I live in fear? Do I let doubt rule me? And fear, if fed, forces us to give in, retreat, and live aimlessly. But faith enables us to step into our God-given destiny. And I think that's not just an individual message, because sometimes it's really hard to have faith as an individual. But in a community of faith, we can spur one another on in that. We challenge each other to that. We hold each other accountable to that. And we move forward together in faith. And also, as a community, can we let the voice of faith shout the loudest in all we do, in all we do going forward? And become the people and fulfill the purposes God has for us. Amen. So I'd like to just close in prayer and then hand back to Laura for communion. But maybe if I could just give a moment of quiet, really, just to reflect on what's been said. I know that's a lot of words and a lot of noise, but just to allow God to highlight to you whatever he wants to from this morning's talk. So let's just have a moment of silence.